Turn to read for our study this morning. Back to Joshua's record of the gospel. And again to chapter 14. And we will pick up the reading at verse 10, although we have already preached from a couple of these verses, 10 and 11. For the continuity of the thought, we'll pick up again at verse 10 and read through verse 15, completing the chapter. Joshua 14, verse 10. And now, this is Caleb speaking, of course, before Joshua and before all of Israel's rulers. And now, behold, the Lord hath kept me alive, as he said, these 45 years, even since the Lord spake this word unto Moses, while the children of Israel wandered in the wilderness. And now, lo, I am this day 85 years old, as yet I am as strong this day as I was in the day that Moses sent me. As my strength was then, even so is my strength now. To walk, both to go out and to come in. Now therefore, give me this mountain whereof the Lord spake in that day. For thou heardest in that day how the Anakims were there, and that cities were great and fenced. And if so be the Lord will be with me, then I shall be able to drive them out, as the Lord said. And Joshua blessed him, and gave unto Caleb the son of Jephunneh, Hebron, for inheritance. Hebron therefore became the inheritance of Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, unto this day, because that he did wholly follow the Lord God of Israel. And the name of Hebron before was Kirjath Arba, which Arba was a great man among the Anakims, and the land had rest from war. Coming again now to our study together in chapter 14 of Joshua's record of a faithful generation. We come, Lord willing, to finish our consideration of this chapter. Our text at verse 12 begins with two words which cast us back not only to all the preceding verses in this chapter, but back to all the history of Caleb's life for these 45 years. Verse 12 begins with the words, now, therefore. Now, therefore. Caleb stands before Joshua to come and claim the promise that God had made to him so long ago. As he stands here, we've already seen, he recounted his testimony. He recounted his testimony all the way back to that day, which his main audience, Joshua, could well remember. That day when the Lord sent them, along with 10 others, to spy out the land. And they, being wholly committed to the Lord and following after the Lord, they came back with a clear and bold testimony that they could and should take the land then. You know the rest of the unfolding of the story. And Caleb refers to it himself. When he says they wandered, he said, verse 10, all of Israel wandered in the wilderness. And so, he gives clear testimony, going all the way back to that first event. And then all of these years in the wilderness with a dying generation. And then there are all these 5, 6, whatever the number you decide on. All these years warring with Israel until God already in chapter 13 has reallocated, if you please, his servant Joshua from warring to working to divide the land. All through all of this, Caleb recounts and then comes down to verse 12 and says, Now all of that, I have seen, I have done all of that now, he says, now therefore, give me this mountain. The literal translation I thought was of some interest, these words now literally means exactly what it says. It literally means at this time. But therefore means to set over against. Therefore means to set one thing over against another. Therefore. There is a comparative made here. So that literally Caleb is saying, now, Joshua, set over against all of that. All that he's just testified and all that he's just said in the presence of Joshua and all and the rulers of Israel. He says to Joshua, now, set all of that over against this moment right now. And in the light of that, I come to ask you, give me this mountain. This mountain. This mountain. What mountain? Well, our text tells us later in verse 13 and following that it was that mountainous area of the cities of Hebron, Debir and Anab. As to its history and connections, Matthew Henry tells us it was an area belonging to Arba, a man that was a great man among the Anakims. It's called in other places Kirjat Arba, or the city of Arba, Genesis chapter 23 and verse 2. And it's the place where Sarah died. Somewhere hereabouts, somewhere in this area hereabouts, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob lived most of their time that they lived in Cana. And near it is the cave of Machpelah, where they were buried. Some scholars think that this may have influenced Caleb's choice to come here the first time that he went in. You remember, this is the area that he scouted. This is the area that the Lord promised to him. And some think that it may have been all of this connection with the ancestors of Israel that might have influenced Caleb to go to that area as a spy himself. The name Hebron, of course, signifies communion with God. Well, whatever the reasons may be, we don't know, but whatever the reasons may be, Caleb chose this place those 45 years ago. And then when we come to verse 12 of chapter 14, he says, now! Now! Now he has come to claim it. Whatever else may be said of its former and later history, it stands on this day as Caleb makes his appeal to Joshua. It stands on this day, a rough mountain region infested with hordes of the fiercest and most feared of the warring pagans in this warring pagan land of Canaan. And this brings me to my first lesson for our admonition in this text today. Simply put, as an instruction to a faithful generation, I could say it no plainer than these two simple words, choose war. Choose war. Someone well said, that like Lot, we commonly choose the pleasant places, Genesis 13:10, and are greedy for great reward while extending little service. Caleb is not such a man. Oh, but what a great reward awaited him. Well, indeed, has another man said, no easy conquest was to be anticipated by Caleb. Yet the courageous soldier said, give me this man. Others may choose quiet resting places. Let me go to the high places of the field. Is there not here an example worthy of imitation? Who will be the advance guard of the Christian army to attack the fortress of sin and of Satan? An infusion of Caleb's spirit would do much to reconcile us to what we mourn over as our hardships in our lot. Can I just repeat that? An infusion of Caleb's spirit would do much to reconcile us to what we mourn over as hardships in our lot. We should take a different view, says this commentator. We should take a different view and regard them as our reward, increasing the honor put upon us by God. One man has to struggle in business against fearful odds. Another is plagued with a wretched temper. A third is sorely tempted to murmur under heavy bereavement. God intends these various trials as disciplines and as honors. The troubles are the Achim, who must be cheerfully, bravely encountered. How deep felt will be the joy of triumph. No soldier ought to lament when placed by God in the front line of the battle. Choose war! Oh yes. Another has admonished our hearts in these words. He said, is there not something typical here? All things that threaten and oppose become serviceable when we face them bravely. That which threatens to destroy becomes a quiet resting place and a peaceable habitation. The enemies become the servants. The hindrances become the helps. The terrors change to fountains of refreshment. Let us be braver, refusing to despair and refusing to shrink from any difficulty. The same Savior rules now as ruled then, and He calls us to noble and therefore difficult duties. There are lots of children of Anakim still. Fear them, and you doom yourself to wilderness wanderings and a dishonorable grave. Meet them, and you conquer them easily. Shame and reproach for Christ are children of Anakim. The fear of falling is another. A corrupting taste and an indolent inclination is another. Christ has grand rewards and blessed helps for such as face these things. As to Caleb, so always, he gives ultimate inheritance and present rewards to those who will engage the war. Let us not miss these, but seek to secure them with all of our hearts. In a word, can I just put it through you again briefly? Choose war. These Anakims must die, and they will not be vanquished from the beds of indifference, nor the couches of worldly comfort, nor the slothful ease of the carnally carefree. They must be fought. And God's wars cannot be fought by proxy, hired by blood money of indolence. That's where we are in much of what passes for Christianity today. We'll hire somebody to do the job. But God's wars can't be fought by proxy. They must be fought by believers. Will take up the sword and engage the enemy. Caleb stands before this congregation on this day and says, now, I've given you my testimony. You know where I am. You know who I am. You know why I stand here. Now, give me this mountain. He chose war. Stand up, I say, and choose war. You don't have to attack a mountain. You know that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about in your personal life. I'm talking about in your experience with Christ. I'm talking about in your walk with Christ. I'm talking about on your job, at your school, wherever you are, whatever you do. Choose war. Choose hardship over comfort. Choose sacrifice over self-indulgence. Choose action over lethargy. Choose strain over ease, loss over gain, isolation over popularity and camaraderie, and choose trouble over a penny quietude. Choose war. Caleb chose war. Oh, would that God would help us. Oh, blessed God, give us a Calebian spirit again. This is one faithful model from an entire faithful generation. Can I just show you another glorious example in history, in the sacred record, of such a spirit? You'll remember that black, dark day in the otherwise bright career of that King David. When in 2 Samuel, in chapter 11, 2 Samuel, in chapter 11, King David chose comfort over war. He chose comfort and ease and pleasure over war. And he stained his good name and sent into total eclipse his otherwise glorious reign by a single act so foul that God commissioned a special prophet to go and address it. Nathan. And then, as in every case, as is always the case, one evil hatched another evil, and David sent for Uriah to entrap him with a cover-up to disguise his own sin. But alas, the heinous plot failed, because unlike David, Uriah, in the words of Hebrews 11 and 25, chose rather to suffer the afflictions with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. Listen to the testimony. 2 Samuel chapter 11, verse 10. When they had told David, saying, Uriah went not down into his house, David said, Uriah, camest thou not from thy journey? Why then didst thou not go down unto thine house? You know the story. David called him in off the front lines because he had committed adultery with his wife and engaged himself in a way that was evil. Now he calls Uriah in. He says, go home and be with your wife. And Uriah didn't go. David calls him in and says, what happened? Why didn't you go down to your house? In verse 11, Uriah said unto David, the ark and Israel and Judah abide in tents, and my lord Joab and the servants of my lord are in camp in open fields. Shall I go into mine house to eat and drink and to lie with my wife? And thou livest, and as my soul liveth, I will not do this thing. I have chosen war. Not ease, not comfort, not even the legitimate and rightful blessings I could have in my life. I've laid it all aside. I've chosen war. As long as God's people are engaged in it, I'm going to be there. Oh, would the God that we could have the Spirit about us. How spoiled and pampered and weak we have become. Unwilling to sacrifice, unwilling to lay down our pleasures and our enjoyments. Achieve war. Oh, learn a lesson from this faithful servant in a faithful generation. Choose war. God gives you a choice. Choose it. I say you need to learn, I need to learn, we need to learn this principle. Choose war when your friends are laughing. Choose war. Volunteer for it. Sign up. Choose war when your friends are laughing and scoffing and mocking and making fun about it. You choose war. Choose war when the sirens of modernity are calling you to sleep a sleep of indolence. Choose war! Choose war when aches and pains are gripping you and you feel like you can't hardly get up or you can't hardly move. Get up and choose war! Choose war when worldly pleasures are teasing at you and saying, come on over here! Come on, enjoy this! Look how the Lord's blessed you. Enjoy this. Choose war. Choose war when loneliness and sorrow are wailing in your ear. Grief comes. Be strong and choose war. Like Caleb, choose war. But notice now, it's not through his own strength. It's not his own merits. It's not his own prowess. Caleb expects to win this mountain. Look at verse 12 again. Caleb says, For thou heardest in that day how the Anakims were there, and that the cities were great and fenced. If so be the Lord will be with me. If so be the Lord will be with me, I shall be able to drive them out, as the Lord said. No, it's not through his own strength, his own prowess, his own merits, his own experience that he expects to gain this mountain. Oh, look at this and learn this lesson today. Learn with Caleb your absolute dependence on the arm of God for your victory. It's not the unaided strength of carnal measures that Caleb has confidence in. Confidence. Caleb said, if so be that the Lord will be with me, I'll take this man. This is the most needful thing for the securing of Canaan's mountains, that the Lord be with me. Bush said, commenting on Caleb's testimony here, Bush said, the expression is not to be understood as implying any doubt in his mind of God's readiness to assist him, but simply as a disclaimer of exclusive reliance on his own unaided prowess. It is the language of one who feels that an arm of flesh, even all the forces of Israel combined, without the blessings of heaven, would be powerless to accomplish the desired end. But with his aid, nothing could be lacking. Reading recently another sermon of the Blessed Samuel Davies in 1758. Expressing this very thought of our need for God to do a work. Davies said this, when we see a people enjoy the frequent cultivations of the gospel and the means of spiritual fruitfulness, and yet few new trees of righteousness planted, and those that have been planted seemingly withering and unfruitful, we cannot but conclude that something is lacking, without which all the means we enjoy will be of no service. We should naturally turn our thoughts to an inquiry. What is lacking? Had we tilled our lands from year to year without a crop, would we not ask this question? What is lacking? And since we find at present that notwithstanding all the labors bestowed upon us, we lie in a deep sleep and hardly know what it is of late to be animated with the news of some careless sinner here or there awakened to serious concern about his eternal state, it is high time to inquire what is lacking. There is certainly something lacking, which is of great consequence. Here are the gospel and its ordinances, which at times have done great things and sinners have yielded to their resistless energy. Here is a minister who, however weak, has sometimes been the happy instrument of giving a sinner an alarm and speaking a word in season to those that are weary. Here are hearers that crowd our sanctuary, hearers of the same kind with those whom we've seen ere now fall under the power of the word. And what then? what is lacking? Why, God! God that alone can give the increase is not here by the influences of His grace. And in His absence, neither he that planteth is anything, nor he that watereth. They are all nothing together. And may labor till doomsday and never convert one soul. Where is the Lord God of Elijah, the Bible said? Where is he that can do more execution with one feeble sentence than we can with 1,000 of our most powerful sermons? Why, I tell you, he hath hid his face, and hence there is none that calleth upon his name and stirreth up himself to take hold of him, Isaiah. And all the Spirit is poured upon us from high, from on high, nothing but briars and thorns will come up without him. Oh, yes. I said to you in my first lesson, choose war. And I say to you now that to choose war is ours to do, but to make war is altogether the business of God. To choose war is ours to do, but to make war is altogether the business of God. Caleb said, if so be the Lord be with thee, I'll take this mountain. Dear old Bunyan, we see the lesson the Lord taught in man's soul, don't we? We see the lesson taught in man's soul where we are studying right now, don't we? Oh, Emmanuel's gone. Emmanuel's gone. With him gone, man's soul is in a shambles. Learn this lesson. Learn this lesson. But now, sadly, we learn another lesson from this fateful record. Oh, alas, alas, this lesson. Even faithful men cannot entail their virtues to the next generation. Even faithful men cannot entail their virtues to the next generation. Matthew Henry rightly points out to us that concerning this place of Hebron and this man of Caleb, Henry said, we are afterwards told in the sacred record, that is later on, that Hebron was one of the cities belonging to the priests, Joshua 21 and verse 13. And in Joshua 20 and verse 7, we're told that it is a city of refuge. Now follow me. When Caleb had it, he contented himself with the country round about it and cheerfully gave the city to the priests, the Lord's ministers, thinking it could not be better bestowed. No, not upon his own children. He gave it to the priests. Nor did he think that it was less his own for being devoted to God in this way. As well as that, we know that it was a royal city. And in the beginning of David's reign, the metropolis of the kingdom of Judah. And thither the people resorted to David. And there he reigned 7 years. And thus highly was Caleb's city honored. Then says this commentator, it is a pity. It is a pity there should have been such a blemish upon his family long after, as Nabal was, who was We're told in 1 Samuel 25 and verse 3, he was of the house of Caleb. The best men cannot entail their virtues to their posterity. What a wretched business this was. You remember it. What a wretched business this was in 1 Samuel and chapter 25 with Nabal. You remember the story. David going out and he can't pass. And Nabal, treatment, disgusting, reproachful, vile. What a godless wretch he was! He was a descendant of Caleb. Learn this lesson, my friend, from a faithful generation. Even the best of men cannot entail their virtues to their posterity. God must do it. Can I just say to you on this point, salvation is not in the genes. Righteousness is not in the blood. I'm sorry, but our blessed covenanting brother are wrong. Salvation is not in the genes, and righteousness is not in the blood, and true and saving piety is not in the power of perpetuity through family posterity. It is not. I wish it were. Bunyan said, good men have bad breaths. And while this offers little in the way of consolation to the heart of a truly godly father, a truly godly mother, yet it is a lesson that we must learn. Finally, let me take from this our text, before we leave it, one more lesson from a faithful generation. I give you this lesson before we leave this chapter. Thanks be unto God for this lesson. A faithful generation will surely enjoy rest. Verse 15. The name of Hebron before was Kirjath Arba, which Arba was a great man among the Anakims, and the land at rest for war. Oh yes, oh yes. Let us not forget, as it is so easy for us to forget, let us not forget in the midst of our study of all this war in Joshua's record, let us not forget it will not always be so. It will not always be so. We have a wonderful word to our hearts given to us in Revelation chapter 14 and verse 13. And I heard a voice from heaven saying unto me, write, blessed are the dead which die in the Lord from henceforth. Yea, saith the Spirit, that they may rest from their labors, and their works do follow them. They're going to rest. That's a wonderful word there. I love the study of it. That particular word, rest. There are others. In fact, over in Hebrews chapter 4 and verse 9, there's the Greek word sabbatismos, from which we get our word Sabbath. There is that Sabbath rest, but that's not the word used here in Revelation. It's another word. It comes from two Greek words. Rest made from two Greek words, anapao, which means to stop, desist. Shokak, which means repose and quietness. What a wonderful word to be used according to the description there in Revelation 14:13, because they're going to stop warring and repose in quietness. It'll not always be war. It'll not. There comes a time of rest. My wife, when I came in the sanctuary, she was playing that song. She had heard me listening to it downstairs, evidently earlier. I was listening to that great choir singing, "It Will Be Worth It All." When we said Jesus, it won't always be war. Choose war! Choose war! Because the day will come, there'll be no more war. It'll be rest. This is the sure end of all who choose war in a faithful generation. This, the last line in verse 15 of chapter 14, this is the sure end to all who choose war in a faithful generation. There will be no more war. Oh, may this most faithful servant in this faithful generation be to our hearts both a solemn admonition and a sacred encouragement to press on in the claiming of mountains, mountains of heritage our God has promised. Hymn writer in our book has said, when we pass through yonder river, when we reach the farther shore, there's an end of war forever. We shall see our foes no more. All our conflicts then shall cease, followed by eternal peace. After warfare, rest is pleasant. Oh, how sweet the prospect is. Though we toil and strive at present, let us not repine at this. Toil and pain and conflict past. All endear. Repose at last. When we gain the heavenly regions, when we touch the heavenly shore, blessed thought, no hostile legions can alarm or trouble more. Far beyond the reach of foes, we shall dwell in sweet repose. Oh, that hope, how bright, how glorious, 'tis this people's blessed reward. In the Savior's strength victorious, they at length behold their Lord. In His kingdom they shall rest. In His love be fully blessed. Learn this lesson. Choose war. But oh, the day will come. There'll be war no more. We shall rest.